On today's episode of The Good Word, the wildest night in the NBA in quite some time, Giannis suffers an injury with the playoffs around the corner, the Suns get their power stolen, and we wonder if Victor Wembanyama will wind up on all defense or even win Defensive Player of the Year. All that and producer John on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, which means it is producer John and myself. I am in New York City for Adam Silver's Board of Governors press conference and meeting with the rich group of billionaires who own the member franchises. A weird thing because he's the boss, but he has 31 bosses. It's just a weird, weird situation there. But that meant that last night, John, I got to witness, or I got to watch and follow along with on my flight to New York. And then once I got to my hotel, last night was one of those like Bruce Wayne in the Joker. Remember the first Batman where the Joker runs into Vicki Vale's crib and Bruce Wayne is there and he needs to create a distraction. So he's like, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. That's what last night was, John, okay? Because if you weren't following along, Draymond Green turning into a three-point shooter was only maybe the fourth or fifth weirdest thing that happened last night, okay? And that was Draymond going 5 of 5 from three in the first half. And the Warriors were like 15 of 22. But we're going to get back to that because, once again, that was like number 5 on the list. Giannis collapsing in a heap in the second half of the Bucks-Celtics game on TNT. Non-contact injury, reaches for the back of his leg. Everybody thinks what they think. But he was able to walk off under his own power in general, and then you get to see him walking out, leaving the game. So that was like a good sign. And then I believe there was Adrian Wojnarowski came out and said that the MRI said that his Achilles is clean. The first thing everybody thinks of is going to be Kevin Durant, 2019 Western Conference Semis, Warriors, Rockets. Kevin Durant hurts his calf, misses the rest of that series. That was a series where Steph goes scoreless in the first half of game 6, scores 33 in the second half. We were all saying a bunch of things about Stephen Curry then. Championship later, we ain't saying shit. You know what I mean? Like we're not saying anything. But then a couple of weeks later, Warriors sweep the Trailblazers in the conference finals. Warriors go down 3-1 in the NBA finals to Toronto. Boom. Kevin Durant pops up, shows up, gives us 12 to 15 minutes of basketball goodness. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember. I remember going like, I can't believe he just came out of the trainer's room and is doing this. And right when I thought that, things got worse.
Things got catastrophically worse. Like, I remember, because that was my first NBA Finals, John. So I want to say it's anticlimactic, but it felt anticlimactic leading up into that game 5. And then Kevin Durant is there, and Toronto's ready. Toronto is ready to celebrate. And then Kevin Durant goes Slim Reaper. He and Kawhi Leonard start going one-on-one, and I'm like, yeah, we are here. We are final. This is the NBA Finals. And then on the right wing, boom, he goes down. Achilles, Bob Myers is in tears. The finals just needed to end right then and there. Winds up going to a game 6. Toronto wins, all that stuff. So that was everybody's thought last night, but hopefully it'll be a 2-week injury. I remember the exact soleus. Is that what it's called? Maybe. I don't know. Soleus, calf injury. Dame Lillard had it last year. Missed some time. Jeff Stotts from In Street Clothes on Twitter or on X or whatever we call it nowadays says the average time with an injury like that, depending on the grade of the strain, got to make sure about that. The higher the grade of the strain, the better the prognosis is for a return. But the average injury for something like that, the average time is 17 days. Now, the NBA playoffs, it starts with the play-in on April 16th. So teams get that extra week once the regular season ends. The regular season will end on Sunday. You get the extra days. And this is where Adam Silver's NBA can help Giannis Antetokounmpo, baby. This is where Adam Silver's NBA can help. Because you want to know why? Because the NBA controls the scheduling. And if we want to get Giannis back on the floor for the second seeded Bucks, you know what's going to happen? Game one, you can't really do anything about. Game two, you can't do anything about. But we got something called a long break, honey. You can go between games two and game three and go, oh, game one on Sunday, game two on Tuesday, game three, we can schedule that in 2025. Nobody will be the wiser. We going to wait until Giannis comes back. That's going to be TBA, all right? To be announced. We going to make sure that we get all of Giannis in the first round of the playoffs. Guess what? It might not help anyway, all right? Let's be perfectly honest. It might not help because the Bucks are in the words of Bernie Mac and Players Club, trouble, walk it off. They in trouble. John. They about to get swole.
But wait. You can't say the Bucks are in trouble even with Giannis without talking about what they did to the Celtics last night, right?
It depends on how you look at it. That's an excellent point, John. And for some people, like me included, who believe that the Bucks can give the Celtics a whole lot of trouble, if not outright beat them if they get there. They beat them by 50. In one game earlier this season, that was with Adrian Griffin as coach. So Doc Rivers can't even, you know, hang that, right? That's for Doc Rivers to be the 500 coach. That can't be one of his wins. And then they beat him last night in a game where the Celtics had two free throws. Now, there's a school of thought that you can look at that and you can say the Celtics have everything wrapped up. They had nothing to play for.
Wait, go back. The Celtics had zero free throws.
Yeah, but the Bucks had like two.
Yeah. Exactly.
that was a mutually agreed upon game where they were like, hey, y'all, no hard contact today. We got to save our bodies for when it really comes. And then Giannis gets hurt on a non-contact. But one of the things that I think about when I think about playoff basketball, and I'm sure some people will view me as a Celtic critic, not a Celtic critic. I believe that everything they're doing is legit. But two things. John has a concern. I have a concern. I'm going to give you mine. In playoff basketball, and we said this with Monica McNutt. If you haven't heard that show, go back to listen to it Monday. In playoff basketball, by game three, everybody knows what everybody's doing. You're not going to really scheme anything. It's going to come down to individual talent, individual execution. The Celtics, as great of a player as Jason Tatum is, as great of a player as Jaylen Brown is, they don't have anybody that, by force of their play, makes defenses uncomfortable and can draw two. Blow by their man, draw two, swing, swing. Everything is created by function of the Celtics' movement and their offense. But if you gum up their offense, then they're just going to be launching a bunch of threes. If you just wind up switching everything, and God forbid, Kristaps Porzingis cannot unlock himself in the post, because that's one of the big things with the Celtics. Porzingis in the post has been the most efficient post player in the league this year, and not just because he's like Shaq in 2001, no, but because he makes defenses account for him in a different way. You get switches, you get this seven-footer, and then that puts defenses in rotation. That makes defenses a little more uncomfortable. What happens if defenses find a way to scheme that out, or you just live with Porzingis saying, okay, shoot over the top, but we're going to slow that offense down to where we're not going to let all these other guys get off. Who can beat their guys off the dribble and make a defense uncomfortable? That could be a kryptonite sort of thing. John has another thing or concern for the Celtics.
I mean, I have a number of concerns about the Celtics. I don't even know which one you're referencing, but I'll tell you two things kind of tied into each other that worried me last night. Which is, the Bucks were playing playoff defense in my eyes. They were closing out hard and they were closing out fast. And I think part of this is that they inserted Patrick Beverly back into the, well, into the starting lineup, and they took Malik Beasley out, and Beverly had everyone revved up and ready to go. But I saw Celtics players unable to do anything against hard closeouts. And Jaylen Brown was the only one who would actually put the ball down and dribble and try and go towards the hoop. But this is a team that most of the year has been focused on, let's get open threes, let's not get physical contact at the rim and all that stuff. And so I saw a number of times dudes put the ball on the ground, get to the hoop. There's not really much in the way of defense there. There's like a dude trailing them, and they would still kick back out for a three, and the ball would keep moving and keep moving. I was like, if they're going to be passing up, you know, layups and dunks at the rim because they don't want to take the contact and they can't do anything with these hard closeouts, I'm concerned about how they're going to play offense in the playoffs.
Well, naturally, you're taught, especially if there's an open man, you're taught, close out hard, be ready to rotate. But if you're hugging and you're saying, hey, the closeout is the closeout, do not help over there, then the swing, you eliminate the swing. You eliminate that next pass. And you're saying the hard closeout means either he's going to sidestep or he's going to try to, are you trying to force him to come in and take a 21 footer inside the line, which they don't want to do, or you're forcing him to come to the rim. And the Celtics don't have necessarily great finishers at the rim.
They just do. Need someone who can hit a floater. Like, they, no one was even trying a floater, which felt like it would have been an easy shot for them in that situation. It's not a 21 footer. That's a 5 footer, but I don't see any floaters coming from them at all. It's just more swing, pass, try and get an open shot.
Once again, that could very well be vanilla game plan, right? Could very well be vanilla game plan. But think about this. Giannis, left calf strain, went down in a heap, MRI this morning, if you're hearing it's Thursday, this morning, left Achilles tendon fully intact. Still going to be a concern. 17 days, possibly. But Giannis is an alien. Always remember that. Giannis is an alien, so we have to be careful there. But I think he's going to at least miss the rest of the regular season. I think you can count him out there. And then also, if they are in that 2-7 line, they better hope and pray it's not the Philadelphia 76ers. They better hope and pray it's not Joel Embiid in that team. Now, Jalen Brunson went for 45 against the Bulls on Alex Caruso and them. Torrey Craig decided, hey, we're down 10. Let's play Sweet Georgia Brown. Harlem Glow tried the music, baby. I'm going to throw that thing off the glass. And, oh, my God, that's Andre Drummond's music. That was like that eclipse that everybody looked up with their dumb asses without the glasses on. And Torrey Craig got to see that over his left shoulder last night. Billy Donovan probably was like, you know what? Kentucky looks like a real cool job right now. That's what he was thinking. Bulls are destined for the play-in. Andre Drummond wound up going down not too much longer after. That's going to be a huge loss for them in terms of size in that play-in game against Atlanta. Okay, cool. That's only the second thing, but Jalen Brunson's going 45. He's not making a case for all first-team NBA, but I feel like he is strongly solidified as an all-second-teamer. One of the other things, thing number three, the Phoenix Suns, they just had their power stolen by the Monstars yesterday. They were down like 37-4. Like, I thought it was a typo. Like, a friend of mine texted me and she was like, the Suns. And I'm like, what the hell did they do now? I'm fully enthralled in Lakers Warriors because Draymond is playing the type of offensive basketball I've never seen him play. I'm not even paying attention to another game. And I go and check the box score and I'm like, this can't be right. It says 37-4. Kevin Durant, 0 for 10. Devin Booker, 0 for 10. This can't be real. Yes, it is real. Yes, it is real. Now, John, the Phoenix Suns have now slipped to 7 in the Western Conference, which means they're in play-in territory, right? This is just dumb. The Clippers had a 33-point lead at half with no Kawhi Leonard, no James Harden. Paul George, who I keep telling y'all is a better number one than he is a number two. He's a number one or a number three. That's all I'm telling you. I don't think this is a long-term problem, or should be a long-term problem with Kawhi Leonard, but I definitely think that when Paul George is left to play with his own devices, he is playing at his own pace, and that pace, while it might be slow, that pace is smooth, that pace is fluid, and everybody else can play. That is one of those interesting things. And if you are the Phoenix Suns, and they revved it up and they got back, and I think they were down, they got it down to maybe like single digits in the fourth quarter, but they could not complete it. They wound up losing 105-92, as they should have. You go down 30 points, you don't deserve to win. You ever played Madden? I never tell you my Madden story. You want to tell you my Madden story, John? So, John, I think I'm playing with the Philadelphia Eagles of Donovan McNabb and Todd Stinkston and James Trash, right? That's what they were called. That's what they were called. I was up 14-0. And I have some stupid broken play where McNabb is supposed to bootleg and get like one of the tight ends out in the flat or something like that. I'm at my own 20-yard line. Something happens where the tight end goes down, but he takes down the edge with him.
Yeah.
There's nothing but real estate. Donovan McNabb runs 75 fucking yards for a touchdown. I gave him the L. Get off the sticks. Oh, baby, he got mad.
Are you saying Paul George is throwing the Suns off the sticks?
He threw the Suns off the sticks, dog. Threw the Suns off the sticks. KD, Book, Grayson Allen, get off the sticks. Get to the play-in. Get y'all asses to the play-in. There's no way that story's going to make the podcast.
Oh, I'll leave it in. That story was fun. I'll say this about the Phoenix Suns. I think they are a really good example about why no one should try like big three things in the NBA anymore. And I know this is because Nurkic didn't play. He was either sick or injured last night. I don't know which one, but if you are starting Drew Eubanks, you are not a serious playoff team. And that was part of the problem last night. It wasn't all of the problem. I think he was negative 20 in like 12 minutes, but
they didn't start him in the second half. I remember that.
Yeah, but we've seen it like the second half of the season, how much they need to go to Durant at the five, because if Nurkic is not there, or even sometimes if Nurkic is there, they just don't have a big that works with it, because they didn't have money left over after the other three guys got signed.
Nope. And once again, in playoff basketball, who's going to get you easy shots? Who's going to make a defense uncomfortable? And it's crazy that they have all those three guys who can score, but your number one objective should be, how are we going to get Kevin Durant easy shots in a playoff situation? And I don't think they necessarily have an answer for that. And you just talked about Drew Eubanks, who caught the cops. Drew Eubanks caught the cops, y'all. Like, how can I trust you in my locker room? Okay, yeah, you got stole on in a loading dock by Isaiah Stewart. You got stole on. It happens. Probably not a pleasant experience, but you can't call the cops. He caught the cops, man. It's not cool. Speaking of calling the cops, Chris Paul. Because Chris Paul loves being the cops, right? Did you see the one play, John, where he barely crossed half court, then he stuck his hip out and he stuck his leg out like he was doing the Karate Kid, sweeping the leg, and the leg didn't get swept and he got bumped and he went across half court and the official rightfully said, "Nah, you trying to call the cops? You trying to beat the cops? That's a backcourt violation." Chris Paul was incredulous. He looked at that man like he was Scott Foster. And I don't know who the ref was, but Scott Foster got some salt and pepper in his hair. That dude was a little bit younger. He had slick back, dark hair. Scott Foster, a little old, a little more seasoned. I'm never a fan of players calling the cops or players being the cops. Play ball. But that's what Golden State did last night. They played ball, John. I think they were three-pointers away from the NBA record. I think if you go back to January 31st, the Warriors are 24-11, and that, which is the seventh best record overall in the NBA, I think you're behind Boston and Denver and Minnesota and Oklahoma City, and I think Orlando is in there. And the 24-11, that's like a mid-50s win pace. You know who's eighth in that? The Lakers, 21-10 since January 31st. But a few of those losses have been to the Golden State Warriors. And now, perhaps we are destined, perhaps Vinny is destined to be going to California for the play-in, Warriors, Lakers. No Anthony Davis with, you know, migraine and nausea. And I know I got all the migraine jokes for Scottie Pippen in the 1990 Eastern Conference Finals Game 7 that the Pistons were going to win anyway because they were up 26 points in the third quarter. And stupid people like Max Kellerman say, if Scottie Pippen had played, the Bulls would have won. No, they wouldn't have. I don't got no real jokes for Anthony Davis on this one. If you are here, you know, throwing up with nausea, that's basically what they're saying, you know, nausea. They're basically saying you're throwing up. I ain't really got no jokes for you. Sit down, get yourself right. Draymond Green hitting 5 threes. You could have given me a million things that you could have predicted would have happened in that game, and that wouldn't have been one of them. Not at all. And I wonder, and to put it like this, John, the Warriors are 24-11 since January 31st. I bet you they were in 10th place then, and they still in 10th place now in the West. That's how crazy the Western Conference is. That's how good the Western Conference is. That you can have the 7th best record overall in the league and not make a dent, not move up one spot in the standings. And now Golden State has the tiebreaker over the Lakers. They've won the season series 3-1. They are a game up on in the loss column, which means that basically if Golden State wins out, they'll overtake the Lakers. It's only a half game difference, but it's in the loss column. If the Warriors win out, I think they're 3 games left. I think they got a big one against Sacramento. I think they got one in Utah. I forgot who their last game is. I feel like I'm going to have to look it up.
They play Portland tomorrow.
That's what, yeah, Portland.
They play the Pelicans on Friday, and then they finish against the Jazz on Sunday.
They can easily win all three of those games because the Kings, not in full free fall, but missing Malik Monk, missing Kevin Huerter, those things hurt. I know Keon Ellis, I think that's his name, had a huge game for them last night. They're trying to prevent themselves from fully capsizing. Just an interesting all-around thing. What else have I missed? Let's see. We talked to LeBron. LeBron was also pulling a Joel Embiid last night. We don't know where LeBron is. He didn't attend shoot around. I don't know if I'm going to play. Y'all think LeBron's going to miss last night's game? Y'all think LeBron's going to miss a TNT game where he could have potentially have put the Warriors away? And Reggie Miller and people say, oh, this is LeBron's flu game. Come on, y'all. Can we not? Okay, fine, cool. Let's move on from that. Oh, yeah, and Victor Wembanyama just announced, hey, y'all, I'm going to be a top 5 player next year. Top 5. Fifth. 1, 2, 3, 4. Fifth. 5. Top 5 player, John. The only players who will be definitively better than him next year, John, will be Jokic, Embiid, Luka. After that, it's time to have a conversation.
Yes, but the conversation is probably going to be around, can the Spurs win a game?
I think the Spurs will undergo some real... Remember the game of Operation?
Yes.
That's like going in the Wayback Machine. Game of Operation. You know, you stick the thing in, try to get the bone out. That sort of thing. 1980s game. Remember board games? We used to play board games like Monopoly and stuff like that and kick everybody's ass, kick kids' ass, all that type of stuff. Remember I said last week, John, the best way to teach a kid is to beat them mercilessly in video games, not Joe Jackson. Operation. That's what the Spurs are going to be like. The Spurs are going to be like a game of Operation. They're going to, I think they're going to keep Devin Vassell because I feel like he fits. And but the rest of those dudes, the who's who of who, I think we're going to see a lot of alterations with the Spurs over the summer. And this is going to be a subject for a later date. But John, stick a pin in this and make sure that we we come back to this. I think the Eastern Conference is going to undergo massive surgery this year, depending on what happens in the playoffs. Because the last time I felt like so much was on the line was 2007. The Pistons were on the back end of that great run. They had added Chris Webber, who was like 84 years old, which is why he wore the number 84. Chris Webber was old. And they had a late run, and they wound up winning the Eastern Conference record. I think they won like 54 games. LeBron James's Cleveland Cavaliers won 50 games. And that was the year that LeBron and the Cavs overtook the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals, coming back from that 2-0 deficit. Y'all remember LeBron, 25 straight points, 29 out of 30 in the Palace, Game 5 Eastern Conference Finals. His announcement to the world that I am here. Danny Ainge looked around and said, if one dude can win the conference, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go get three dudes, or I'm going to go get two more dudes with my dude. His dude was Paul Pierce. And he said, you know what? I'm going to go get Ray Allen with this top five draft pick, trade Jeff Green. I'm going to go get Kevin Garnett, get with my buddy Kevin McHale, give him the poo-poo platter of Al Jefferson. And that's the only name I can remember from that trade. And then boom, just add water. The Celtics go on their run. That changes the Eastern Conference. As we know, that changes the NBA quietly as we know it. That changes the NBA as we know it. And I think depending on how this goes with the Eastern Conference, because so much is on the line, Miami's got a lot on the line. They got a lot on the line, in my opinion. Philadelphia has a lot on the line because we've been saying, can they make it to the conference finals? Joel Embiid, blah, 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 all this type of stuff. They got a lot. Milwaukee, they better win. Milwaukee better win. The Knicks got a lot because they got to figure out how are we going to proceed with Jalen Brunson. Boston Celtics, a lot on the line. Hey, if we can't get it done this year, what's the 50 Cent thing? If I can't do it, it can't be done. That brings us to the other goofy thing that happened last night. Anthony Edwards scored 51 points in front of 50 Cent. You see that? Like, you know, we just missed all that. That's what I'm saying. Most bizarre night in the NBA, John.
It was so crazy. All right, before we hit an ad break, I have this question for you.
Okay.
And it's just kind of tacking on to everything that you were just saying.
Okay.
The playoffs start in 10 days.
That sounds about right.
Let's assume that the 76ers are a part of it. They make it out of the play-in. They are a part of it. Would you pick in a first round playoff series, would you pick anyone over the Sixers? Like if they're coming out of the play-in, they're playing either the Celtics or the Bucks. So we could just go there and we can factor in the Heat too. If you want to talk about the Heat, I know you probably don't, but this is my simple question. Is there any team in the East that you would pick to beat the Sixers in a first round playoff right now, today?
Because I get where you're coming from. Everything looks so shaky. I get it. I wouldn't pick them over the Celtics. Because why would I? Would I pick them over the Bucks? I think there is a strong case, especially even with if there is a healthy Giannis by that point. And we won't know. Like there's two big variables in this. We don't know the grade of the strain, and we don't know the playoff schedule. I was joking about the schedule, but I'm 100% serious. Until we figure out the schedule, we don't know anything. But a fully revved up Joel Embiid, a healthy Joel Embiid, point a minute, dude, that's an interesting prospect. But I keep telling you, his playoff numbers go demon drop. He goes from 34 to 24. New officiating. But you also have the Buddy Hields and the Kyle Lowry's and Tyrese Maxey. I don't know where he's going to land on my most improved ballot. I felt like he was pretty high last year. So I don't know if I would necessarily make that vote this year. But he's gotten used to playing without them. Like, they've barely survived. They survived just enough for Joel Embiid to be able to save them. But I will say, the unknown, I think what John is pointing to is because we don't know how Philadelphia is really going to look fully masked and everything else, you trust them more than you trust the knowns. Like, we've seen the movies for everybody else in the Eastern Conference up until this point. It don't look good, Boston notwithstanding. So, yeah, I get what you're saying, John. So, yeah, we're going to go to an ad break, going to pay some bills, and when we come back, we're going to talk about all defense ballots. We're back on A Good Word. The NBA sent out their awards ballots, which will be due a little less, I think, than a week from now. Got to go just start digging deep into the numbers and talking to folks. You kind of do it as teams come into your city, as you go out and see other teams, you start asking people, John, relative to their expertise. You know, what do you think about this award? Who you see in this award so far? So I've been asking a lot of assistant coaches around the NBA about their all defense teams. Like, who do you got? And I have 15 names that I have written down. And I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. Some people are going to use the positionless thing, and I totally understand it because the NBA gives you the option. I kind of want the all defensive team to look like a team. I kind of like the way the NBA has done things for 60 damn years. Like, it ain't, if it ain't broke, don't break it. And it's not broke. Maybe that's one thing I'll fuss at Adam about later today, and I'm sure he'll take it and swap me away like a bug. But so John has a question about my all defensive team. So John, go ahead and ask me, and I can go ahead and give you my yes answer.
You said you had 15 names?
I got 15 names written down.
Is one of them or more a rookie? We'll start there. It's like 20 questions. Okay, so you got a rookie.
Yes.
Is it Brandon Miller? He's got good defense.
No, it is not Brandon Miller.
Is it Chet Holmgren? He blocks a lot of shots.
It's not Chet. Chet was a thought. Chet was a thought, but no, not him. Good question.
Is it Big Vic?
It is Big Slim.
Nice.
It is Big Slim. The man, I know that we don't look at blocked shots as like this, you know, standalone, just indicator of great defense. It's not an indicator as much anymore as it used to be, right? But the man is averaging 4.6 blocks a game post All-Star break. 96 blocks in 21 games. He had a game against the Nuggets, against the Champs, where he blocked about 8 of them things, and 4 of them things was on the MVP. Like, this... I don't subscribe to the theory that, oh, we shouldn't put Big Vic on an all defensive team or award him as a defensive player of the year because he's got all these years in front of him. We don't know that, y'all. There's no guarantee that this is going, you know, injury wise. Like, we've said a lot of things about a lot of players and it turned out not to be so. Good thing Derrick Rose got that MVP. Because if you had assumed that, hey, Derrick Rose is going to be around and he's going to have plenty of opportunities for MVPs, nah, that's kind of how it works. You give it to him in the year that he deserves it. This ain't the Oscars. You don't give Denzel the Oscar for Training Day. You give it to him for Malcolm X and Training Day. See how that works? Give it to him both. You don't give it to Al Pacino for Scent of a Woman. You give it to Al Pacino for everything else he did before that. Although I liked Scent of a Woman, mind you. That was actually like a good, you know, I actually liked that movie. I didn't hate Scent of a Woman. Al Pacino was like my GOAT.
It's not terrible. It's pretty good. It's entertaining. It's not Scarface.
No, it's not. It's not either of those. But, you know, the fact that Al Pacino can play a Sicilian, and then a Cuban. Hey, I don't know if that's range or that's literally, hey, y'all, we just need somebody that's not quite white. Call Al. And Al's like, you know, Al can go, you know, we could do a whole show on the different Al's, right? But we can go a different show on the different versions of Big Slim, right? You can do a whole show on that. Do you want Big Slim that does the Sham God? Do you want Big Slim that swats your shit to half court? Or do you want Big Slim that can just catch it in midair? Either way, he's going to give it to you every which way. And yes, he's on my ballot. He will be on my ballot. I haven't decided if he is defensive player of the year, not because, oh, he's a rookie and everything else, but it's a point that John brought up earlier. How exceptional can you be as a defensive player if your team isn't even a mid-grade defensive team? If your team isn't worth a damn, how valuable are you defensively? That's an argument I'll listen to rather than, oh man, he's a rookie. Rookie shouldn't do it. No, no, no. If he's worthy, he's worthy, right? Wes Unseld won an MVP in a league that had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in it in his rookie year. And the numbers don't do it justice, but for whatever reason, you talk to people about Wes Unseld, they tell you he deserved it. And you know what the thing was that got me, John? And I know I'm just going to the Wayback Machine. John's like, where the hell is Vinny going? Wes Unseld was the coach of the Bullets, I believe, of course, but before they became the Wizards. This was like in the early 80s. And Bill Laimbeer got into some fight with somebody, and Wes Unseld literally ran behind Lamb, grabbed him, and threw him like a rag doll to the point that Laimbeer like spun around like a ballerina. He's not the most graceful dude anyway, so he spun around like a ballerina, literally landed in the crowd and looked around like, who did that? Who was that big truck? It was the dude in the suit. It wasn't security. It was the 42-year-old Wes Unseld who threw your ass around like a rag doll. That's why I say, if people said Wes Unseld was the MVP the same year he was a rookie, cool. That's why I say, if we decide that Victor Wembanyama is Defensive Player of the Year, I won't quibble with it. He probably won't get my vote, but I will understand if people look at the impact and the numbers and say he deserves it. Now, John, I have 15 names. And I want you to tell me if any name sounds out of line. I'm going to give you the 15. There's only 10 spots, okay? I have Rudy Gobert, Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, Herb Jones of the New Orleans Pelicans, Brooke Lopez, Giannis, Jalen Suggs, Bam Adebayo, Evan Mobley, Big Vic, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard, Alex Caruso. Those are my 15 names.
Wow. Okay. Quick thoughts. Can you make all defense if you are not the best defender on your team? Is a question that I would ask over and over again. Because you have two players from a couple different teams. I think you have two Celtics, because maybe even more than two Celtics. You got Jrue and Derek White.
Yep.
And then there was another pair of teammates towards the end.
I got Rudy and Ant.
Rudy and Ant. That's fine. They're like Jrue and Derek White are playing next to each other. Rudy and Ant.
And Giannis and Brooke Lopez.
That was it. Like, I don't know which one of those guys is the best defender on their team. But that's not a team that's had an outstanding defense this year. Like, the Celtics have, but the Bucks defense has not been outstanding. So I don't know that they necessarily deserve two guys on all defense. Jalen Suggs, as much as I love watching that man play basketball, he is not the best defender on his team. And the best defender on that team is Jonathan Isaacs, who is incredible. He's just not eligible for this, and he probably wouldn't get voted anyway because he's mostly coming off the bench and playing 15 minutes a game, and I'm positive he has not played 65 games this season, nor will he. So I would kind of write him off for that reason. If you are not the best defender on your team, you're probably not all defense. The rest of the names I'm totally rocking with, and I'm glad you included Herb Jones of the New Orleans Pelicans.
Oh, no, Herb Jones had the player of the year. When he blocked Paul George and he literally leaked and was closing out from the restricted area, and Paul George was taking a like top of the key three, and he caught it, and then went down the other end and dunked it. Oh no, that's player of the year. That is player of the year. I think I know how I'm going to go my first team. I think I'm going to have Rudy for sure. I feel like I'm going to have Anthony Davis for sure.
He needs to be on there.
He's playing.
I don't know how he's not getting Defensive Player of the Year hype. He's been that good all year.
Anthony, and when I've said this, I don't know if it goes over people's heads because people just think I'm, you know, Laker hater or whatever it is. when he's on, it's the defensive impact. You're not doing anything around the rim when he's on the floor. And he's not the biggest dude. Like, when you look at him, you still think he's skin and bones. But go look at how he looked in New Orleans. He's put on mass. He's gotten a little bit wider. That's probably a function of age and strengthening his body and everything else. But he's not the dude that you just go move out the way. He is a generational defender who does not have a defensive player of the year, I don't think. I don't think he has a defensive player of the year. Maybe we should look that up.
I'll look it up, but I will say I think this is his best season to date. Like, the best season of his career is this season, would be my opinion, when you factor in like health and performance, and he's been good on offense and defense and all that. And he's probably like already on the fringe or already a Hall of Fame player when he retires. So to be like,
oh, this, they named him all 75, so he's gonna make the Hall of Fame. Remember
that. So future Hall of Fame, all 75, mm-hmm. and this is his best year, and a lot of that value is on defense. Like, it's, I know the first half of the year, everyone was just like, oh, it's Rudy's, and just moved on. But like, Anthony Davis has been amazing. All right, I'll look, you keep going. Give me two. Give me the rest of the three of your first team.
As an aside, they put Michael Cooper in the damn Hall of Fame. Anthony Davis ain't got nothing to worry about. We need to have a conversation about this Hall of Fame stuff. Just because you play with Magic Johnson don't make you no damn Hall of Famer.
Anthony Davis has finished second in Defensive Player of the Year, third in Defensive Player of the Year, fourth in Defensive Player of the Year, but he's never actually won it.
Hey, that they done turned that man into Angela Bassett. Whew. So he gonna get an honorary Defensive Player of the Year. Because we ain't never gave him one. And maybe we should. Maybe somebody else has just been a little better every year. Who knows? But he's going to be on my all-defense first team. Rudy, AD, Big Vic. Those are three. Easy. And here are my last two. Herb Jones. Drew Holiday. And it's kind of between Drew Holiday and Derek White. And it's kind of pick your poison. And that's not set in stone. Like, I can go look at, dig into some more numbers, dig into some more metrics, talk to some more people, and figure some things out. But Drew Holiday is often tasked with guarding the bigger players. He's guarding up on positions, and he ain't that tall. And he ain't that big. He's got a great base. He's got long arms, and he puts you in jail. Okay? He don't put you in jail. He puts you on punishment. You ever been on punishment? No outside for you today. You see all this sunlight? Go sit in the window and watch everybody play outside. Drew Holiday gives you the appearance that you can score on him, but you on punishment. You're on lockdown. You can see the light. You can see everybody hooping outside. You ain't going there. Your fault. Don't act up in school. I'm not saying that from personal experience. I'm just saying. Drew Holiday put people on punishment. That's my five. So, like, even workshopping the rest, Giannis and Suggs and people tell me, people go out of their way to tell me, Ant-Man straps it up. They go out of their way to tell me that. Now, I did have a player tell me when I asked him a couple of weeks ago, I said, what about Ant-Man? He says, I can't put a guy who plays that much offense on all defense. That's what he said. He said, I can't do that.
This leads me to a question I had, because you said the 15 names, and I think I caught all of them. And I have two names that I put together like a little list of my own just so I had a base.
Yeah.
And there's two names on mine that I don't think you mentioned, and I want to ask why.
Okay.
Did you mention Kawhi Leonard?
Yes.
Did you mention Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
I did not.
That is curious to me.
Because you know what I said about block shots? Like, we don't value that as much. I think Shai is a solid defender. I think the steals thing is just, we got to be careful, because Allen Iverson used to lead the league in steals, but nobody would ever consider Allen Iverson a great defender. I'm not saying that that's the case for SGA, because I think he's a solid defender. Do I think I would put him, especially if I'm trying to use at least a baseline of two backcourt players and three frontcourt players? I'm not going full position list, but I'm not going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, no. I was just wondering why he wasn't on your 15.
No, it's just because I only wanted to have 15 names. Because it was just, and maybe when I go through and do it again, because I'm not going to, you know, send in my ballot until like, I'm like the last minute, I'm the last minute person. I'm probably the person that the league says, hey, we know you're on CP time, but can you get these into Ernst & Young? You know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think by and large, I just put those 15 names down and I just started workshopping them out. And I may wind up going back because Jonathan Isaac, yeah, he was a preliminary name that I put on my list, but I knew he doesn't qualify because he doesn't play enough minutes. And some people will say he might be the best defender in basketball, including Victor Wembanyama. So that's one of those weird, weird things. And hopefully for his sake, he can, you know, play with more consistency, get the health thing all the way right, and then get to a point where he can really be part of these conversations because his talent deserves that. So, yeah, that's...
Someone gave me an amazing stat on Jonathan Isaac that I did not verify, so this could be wrong.
Okay.
It was like Jonathan Isaac had not played in 10 consecutive games in like 4 years.
That sounds about right.
And it was because even when he's playing 15 to 18 minutes a game, he goes through 6-7 games and he gets dinged up somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel bad because I love watching him play basketball.
Yes, I do. And what I will say is this. He got to get his health right. And he's got to be able to play with, like I said, some consistency. Like all the other stuff, I'm not factoring in when I'm talking about how you're putting out there. You know what I mean? Think about it. A name I didn't put on my list. Last year's Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr. I didn't even put him on the list. But how rare is it? How rare is it that you have a Defensive Player of the Year, reigning Defensive Player of the Year in his prime, and he doesn't make even the preliminary 15 name list? I feel like Giannis is going to make it on my second team. I feel like Bam is going to make it on my second team. I feel like Alex Caruso is going to make my second team. I feel like there's a good chance that Derek White and Jason Tatum might round it out. I could wind up putting Evan Mobley there. I could wind up putting Jalen Suggs there. I could wind up doing that, but I could wind up putting Ant there. Like, but there is a lot, and Ant is one of the rare superstars to me that takes his matchup. You get extra credit from me when you go and say, I want Jason Tatum. I want the wing player. I want Kawhi Leonard. And then he goes and talks to him too. Oh my God, I need a long Anthony Edwards postseason in my life. I need him to be mic'd up so the NBA can put it on all these social media things and everything. Like, there is just something so magnetic about this kid. He deserves to be in front of the cameras in ways where we don't have to talk about Alex Rodriguez and Glenn Taylor and all that nonsense. We just need a good, solid Ant-Man postseason run. I can't believe I'm volunteering to go spend some time in Minneapolis and not go to see Prince. Like, if this was 2014, I'd find a way, y'all. I'd be like, hey, we going to First Avenue. Hey, bosses, Prince is playing somewhere. I'll go watch the Timberwolves. I'll go and take one for the team.
A, it's probably nice in Minneapolis in June. B, I wanted to say this earlier, so I'm glad Ant came back around. You said that Herb Jones play was best player of the year. And I was thinking about Ant Edwards hitting his head on the backboard to win a game against the Pacers as my, like, that's my top play of the year. And
Can I amend? Because that was a game on the line. John, I stand corrected.
Right. And that's the type of play that will get you on all defense, because it's like, wow, he really cares and gives the effort. And in a clutch moment to win a game, he threw his body out there to win it. So there you go. I'm glad I got you to change your mind on that. All right. We should get to the viewing guide.
Let's get to the viewing guide. So one game each, I feel like, even though Skinny Bowl is tonight, but I feel like we've got some much more pressing games because we've got so many different playoff races. I think the only thing that's set or looks set is the 4-5 in the West, Clippers, Dallas. And I think this will be the third time that they will have played in the first round, the Clippers winning both times. John is over there like, hey, let's exorcise these Clipper demons. Or you won no part of the Clippers in the first round.
Did the Clippers win both times? When the Mavericks got to the Western Conference Finals, didn't they have to go through the Clippers?
No.
Oh, okay. I was wrong about that. I don't remember who they played
in the first round. I don't think the Clippers made the playoffs. I think that was the first year of the play-in where Minnesota beat the Clippers and Pat Beverly was crying.
I think you're right. all right. So my game, and trust me, last night I went into that Suns-Clippers game going like, man, I really want the Suns to win so the Mavericks can maybe get the home court advantage in that 4-5, and the Suns let me down. My game tonight is Timberwolves and Nuggets. This is a big, big factor into who will end up number one in the West.
They're tied.
And yeah, this game doesn't determine who will be number one in the West, but it will be a big determining factor. I love this. Anthony Edwards was asked about the game, and he said, I think everyone knows what is at stake. I don't even need to talk about how big it is. Everybody know. Nikola Jokic asked a similar question, said, I don't think it's a really big game. Yes, we're going to go out there and play to win the game, of course, but I think people are just making their stories that it's a big game. Hopefully it's going to be interesting. God, that man is the most boring quote ever, and I love how he's just like, it's just any old game. Of course, we'll play hard.
It's not very interesting. It's just a game.
And Ant Edwards out here like, I don't even need to say anything. Everybody know.
Everybody know.
I also think this is a particularly good matchup. Like, the Timberwolves might be the best matchup to try and slow down Jokic and the Nuggets. And while we were podcasting, news is that Kat is on his way back. I don't think he will play tonight, but they said he will be back before the end of the season. So this might be the last game they play without Kat.
I think this is also the third time that Minnesota and Denver will have played in the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
So we're getting some close proximity, some playoff-like contentiousness. The one thing I will say with Jokic that I tend to agree with, when you win a championship, there are no more big games.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's what he was doing. Just like, yeah, it's a big game, but also it's a regular season game. Calm down.
Yeah, because I don't think they care. Like, the number one seed probably means, it means more to us, right? Because we're trying to see, well, if the Lakers get in, are they avoiding Denver and all this other type of stuff? And if Denver is two, then that means the Lakers try to aim for seven. But you can't manipulate your way in the standings one way or the other. And for Minnesota, getting a number one seed would be bigger for them than it would be for the other two teams. I think the number one seed means more to the Minnesota Timberwolves than it does to OKC, who's young, and Denver, because they're the champs. And because Minnesota has put so much into this, you know, this Rudy Gobert trade where they gave up all the picks, they got luxury tax aprons a-coming, and you got Anthony Edwards, who you invested a lot in. So yeah, this means a lot to that franchise. And I'm really looking forward to that game. Of course, it's a big game. And I like that Ant isn't running away from it. I get why Denver is saying it's not the big thing, but I love how Ant is saying, yeah, put the pressure on us. We need it. We deserve it. Cool. Now, the game for me is a rematch of the game last night that I said was a disgrace. It is the Suns and the Clippers. Part two, except last night's game, Wednesday night's game, was in Phoenix. Thursday night's game is in Los Angeles. And I don't know what the Suns can do from a schematic standpoint, but they don't want to be in the play-in. I don't care if they think Sacramento winds up being there. Oh, we can play Sacramento. We can beat them and boom, get in. But that ain't what y'all was here for. Y'all was here for a championship. Y'all was here for a long playoff run. Y'all did all this for to play into June, not to get knocked out in April. So I think they have to get their ish together and get it together immediately.
This is not a statistical thing, not an analytics thing, but when you get embarrassed like that, there's the follow-up game, especially if you play in the same team, that's a pride check. Like, they know that everyone's going to be watching the game going, oh, they're going to go down by 30 in the first quarter again? Like, I bet we're going to see the most effort you can possibly get out of the Phoenix Suns in the first quarter of that game.
They better. Oh, we're going to have questions about a lot of people, including that coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a lot, man. It is a lot. It is Adam Silver's dream to have all these games mean so much late into the season. We're going to figure out how the fans react to it when we see the numbers. We're going to figure out if NFL-like parity actually means anything. But I tell you this, the fact that you have so many teams bunched up in both conferences to the point that we are less than a week remaining in the regular season. We have, what 5 days left in the regular season or something along those lines? And we have still so much to be decided. We can't even go into full playoff mode yet. But we will go into playoff mode next week on next week's show. Don't forget the Skinny Bowl tonight. Big Vic and that other skinny dude, Chet Holmgren. Let's not forget about that guy. So, yeah, we got a lot going on tonight and a lot going on for the rest of the week. And that is all we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks again to producer John and the entire team who worked so hard behind the scenes. Stick around for No Cap Room tomorrow, and I'll be back on Monday with another episode of The Good Word, where we're going to preview the play-in matchups and the playoff matchups. Baby, it's that time of year. Until then, everybody be safe.